StartupRad.io, your podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Joe from StartupRad.io, your startup podcast and YouTube blog from Germany, bringing you another interview, more or less from the automotive space. But at first, I would like to welcome Osman here. Hey, how you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
It's totally my pleasure. And we may add that you guys are working a little bit in the automotive space, but we will get to this pretty soon. Can you first tell us a little bit about what you did in your life before and how it made you an entrepreneur?
Well, I was born particularly in Sierra Leone. So this is where I spent the first 5 years of my life before we migrated to Germany. And since we are in Germany, I grew up most of the time in Berlin. I studied in Berlin and studied computer science. And I always wanted to work in the field of computer visualization. So I'm a big Star Trek fan. So being in the teenage years, I always was very fond of how the spaceships looked like and how they were designed. And I wanted to recreate things like this on a computer. So this was how I started to get into 3D visualization in general, starting with 3D Studio. And it wasn't 3D Studio 4.0, I think, that was still on DOS before it became 3D Studio Max when it then started to run on Windows. Yeah.
I just had to smile because my first hint was, for everybody who doesn't know what DOS is, I'll link it down here in the show notes. You're now smiling, but actually I once told somebody augmented reality, it's like the Terminator when he sees this red writing scroll through his vision, and the other one said, I'm afraid I'm too young for this. So I'll totally link this down here in the show notes. And the second question would be, you were also one of the guys who watched Star Trek after school, right? In the afternoon.
Yeah, I was one of those guys, yeah. Running home to watch Next Generation, right?
Admittedly, me too.
Yeah, it was very inspiring and always very exciting.
I know this is a very difficult question to answer, but what's the best Star Trek series would you like most? The original, The Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, Janeway?
I think I'm really a great fan of DS9 because of the complexity of the story and how much they go into depth of educating about the different cultures and the different races in that story. But they also, brought up a lot of interracial conflicts, whether it's religious based or racially based. So basically, they discuss a lot of things that we are facing in real life, and that was quite interesting the way they told the story of DS9, and I think that's one of the best Star Trek TV shows, yeah.
Okay, and now we have to get this bridge. How did you get from visualizing awesome, fancy, faster-than-light spaceships to something like mundane, like interfaces in cars? How did this happen? How did you downgrade?
Yeah, that's a long story, but. To keep the long story short, basically, it's like...
Oh, don't worry. You can tell a long story on our channel. That's what we're here for. Don't worry.
Well, okay. Let's take it step by step. So after finishing my studies, of course, I had to find a job, and I always wanted to work in the film industry to realize the great visuals that we were familiar with in movies. And at that time, when I finished my studies around 2004, there were a lot of great projects which were being produced all over the world, whether it's Lord of the Rings or Star Wars, Harry Potter, you know, different locations, but all over the place, very exciting projects. And I applied for some of those projects and I also got accepted, but there was a second very important topic for me, and that was basically not really to leave my home country, Germany. And so I denied the job offers I had abroad and decided to move to Munich to a company called RTT, where I learned a complete different way of understanding visualization in a more industrial way. So creating visuals in the movie industry is more like it just has to be aesthetic, especially at that time, and it has to look the way people are expecting it. But when you do visualizations for the industrial base, there are expectations of physical accuracy, and the visualization has to be correct in some type of measures that you need to interpret what you're seeing on the screen, right? So that it has some real life means and meanings that people can evaluate to construct stuff. In that case, it was cars. So having this understanding and learning in the company RTT what this basically means for improvement of production, I was completely overwhelmed and found this idea very intriguing. So I wanted to learn more about this. And but I at that time probably I was a bit too pushy, but the development at RTT didn't went fast enough from my point of view. So I had the luck to team up with two other guys, Andreas and Matthias, who had the pace. And so we started the company with a really great real-time visualization and created the software that helped people in the industry to visualize very quickly, very accurately. We built in our application real-time ray tracing, which even raises the accuracy by tracing light rays and casting shadows, visualizing gaps between build parts. We were able to analyze colors very accurately, measurable colors, the light distribution of headlights, for example, when you look at cars. So there were really a long list of features that we were able to build in our application to allow people to do certain measurements and analysis, which were applicable to real life physical objects. Right? And that really changed my understanding of how capable a computer can be. And since then, I always wanted to work on software technologies which are being usable in real life products that can become everyday tools, right? That people are using for everyday usage. Coming from that first company, we had the luck to sell it at some point to Autodesk. But at that time, I already had founded the second company, which I'm working now in Kari GmbH. And there, in the beginning, we also started with services, but from some point, I really wanted to go back to software development and technology development. So this is how we then started to develop tools and solutions for HMIs and cars. Yeah, that's basically the story, how I went from movie visualization to visualization for real products. Yeah.
When you've been telling this story, a few things flashed to my mind. At first, your apartment has to be very interesting if you're all about visuals. Secondly, I imagined you on your first workday designing something really fancy. Look, I made it Art Deco. Keep it functional, Osman, keep it functional. And thirdly, I was wondering if you would have the choice of doing like some animation, CGI stuff right now or from the past, what would have been? What is the most fascinating, like special effects, that you've seen that you would have loved to do yourself? Admittedly, my personal favorite is Pixelmondo, Game of Thrones, The Dragons.
Yeah, I think there's so many extremely talented people nowadays around who are doing really great visuals. You know, it always depends on what you want to focus on, because I think, yeah, Seeing Dragons is of course a very interesting visual to see it in a way that that you believe that it's real, yeah, that it gives you the impression of being real footage. But I think there are also people who are creating characters, faces, which already look so real, which is really breathtaking. Yeah. But of course, what's attracting me most right now is when I look at shows. A TV series that I love very much is The Expanse. And they are creating so great visuals in terms of interface designs that they're showing during the TV series. That's pretty impressive because there's so much thought into their designs. You know, it's not that just a visual that looks good, but it's also interface design that has functional means, that you understand how it's supposed to work if it was real. And this, I think, is really a very, very impressive visualization they're offering there. Yeah.
I was asking this question for a very simple reason, because I just now want to ask, and now you're bringing this expense into the normal cars. How does it work? And what are you guys actually doing now? Because my understanding is you first had a company together with partners, and out of this, you created Inkari, the company we're currently talking about. Is that about right?
That's about right, but Inkari had a different purpose. So the first company was supporting the virtual prototyping process by offering tools to examine concepts on a digital base before you start building up a physical prototype, because this simply saves a lot of money. And using our tool at that time, VRED, gave the users really a huge palette of tools to really examine a lot of different use cases, whether it's a package, as I said, color and trim, light and sight analysis. So these were really a range of functionalities which needed to be examined or saves you a lot of money if you can examine this before you start to build up a physical prototype. Running that company, we needed more people to support our customers on the service level. So that's basically the reason why we created Inkari, to build up a service company to have support us to help out our customers in peak times. But after we sold the company by end of 2012, there was no more a real use for us to support the technology on the server side. So, but we still went on with this for another 2 years. And then in 2014, I bumped into this topic that it might make sense for future cars to reinvent the architecture of interfaces compared to the interfaces cars are using right now, or at that time especially, which is already now 6 years back. So there we had to solve a range of issues, because the hardware which is being built into cars is not comparable with what you have on your PC. It's has less resources, less memory, slower CPUs, not really high-end graphic boards. So you don't really have a lot of hardware resources, but still there's an expectation that the visual representation that you're creating has to be top-notch or state-of-the-art. And we all know how long Pixar's rendering a single image for a movie, for example. Yeah, but we want to have
I don't know. Can you
this
tell
type
me?
Of visualization real time. Yeah,
how long does Pixar take for the rendering of such a visualization? Because I don't know. I'm an amateur here. I don't even do good video editing. Sorry.
Well, let me put it more general. It's not against Pixar. They for sure have even more requirements on their images. But generally, when you're rendering images, you have certain amount of frames per second. So when you look to games, for example, which is more comparable in general, game rendering, then you can achieve like 60 frames per second in a more complex game, or at least 30 frames per second. So we have to do this same amount of rendering every second, but on much lower hardware resources or minimal hardware resources, which are being used in the car industry. But the expectation of the visual quality has to be similar, like what people are used to on games. Yeah? So there we had to figure out how can we achieve this by optimizing our software solution. But that's just one part of the problem, of course, to generate a great output if you have a great artist to create the visualization. But we also have to offer or create the right tooling for the different departments at the enterprises to get to these results, because they have to build it at the end into a car, and therefore they have to stick to certain processes, from the design to the quality assurance to the engineering, to the internationalization of getting all the languages for a specific car. You know, you don't just build a car in a single language. You have to translate it to all the other languages. So these are certain steps that you have to take. And we wanted to offer all these tools these people need to have a streamlined process from start to end, right? To start from the complete conceptual phase of a designer who's inventing on an artistic level how the car cockpit could look like. And at the end, we had to ensure that this conceptual design can end up in the car with the dedicated hardware, which is being built into the car without losing quality.
So, and in between, you also have to have the user experience, because I have painful experience, for example, with the car of my wife. I'm not going to tell what car it is, but I failed repeatedly just to get there's a function to pick up the phone and stuff like this, just to failed just to connect the Bluetooth from this very new cell phone to the car, because it's just so overcomplicated. Nobody really knows how it actually has to go. So it's just
exactly
a nightmare.
But that's almost nobody's fault, even though it's bad. but it's hard to point to anyone to say that person did the mistake, because it's more the process that's causing these issues. Yeah. So the designers are probably inventing a very smart interface design and also UX concept to address all the tools and the functionalities in the car. But then when the process moves on to engineering, then they are using completely different set of tools where they can't one-to-one convert the conceptual design into a productive solution. There's a disconnect. And due to the different type of tool set they're using, they can't replicate it in the same way the designer has initially created it. So this is how these type of irritating results can occur due to the existing process. And we wanted to solve this by offering a tool which can be used consistently from the designers until to the engineers who are building the stuff into the car, because they can all rely on the same data structure, on the same tool sets, on the same functionalities, on the same features which are embedded in the tool. So the conceptual design that the designer has created, he can be sure that this design can be built into the car one-to-one without losing any creativity.
Yeah. I see. And so basically what you guys are doing, you make the design of user-friendly cars easier. Would that be the bottom line?
Initially, we make the creation of the design process. We make that easier, And also the integration into the final product is much easier with our tool, and the whole process becomes much more streamlined. So we did some benchmarking where we were able to evaluate that we were able to reduce the production time from almost 4 years to 18 months just by optimizing the process. So I said, it's not always the people in the process who are causing the issues. It's in some cases, or in many cases, it's often just the general process pipeline, how it works, which are causing the problems. And we believe by creating the right tooling and the right digital solutions, that there's a huge potential of process optimization and streamlining the development time and process in general of product creation.
When I look now at your website, companies you work with, it appears that is used in the premium segment. I see here Audi, Bugatti, Porsche, but also Skoda and VW. Apparently, you have already found some pretty good customers. Plus, you additionally found some investments, right?
Yeah, these are 2 points, but I have to correct it a bit. So, the list of customers we have is correct. These are all companies we're working with very closely. But it's not always in the term of a cockpit design. So we, in the past, we did some services. So there are also some connections to these customers and by doing some services for them. But we are working with more and more people in the cockpit design development. And our company is getting more and more traction in that field. But the companies you just named, most of them are within the Volkswagen brand. So these are all companies which are very close to each other, right? So Lamborghini is a daughter of Audi. Audi is part of Volkswagen. It's the same with Porsche, Skoda, and Seat. So if you have good contacts within Volkswagen, then of course it's not that hard to also work for the different Volkswagen daughters. Yeah, and we had the luck early this year to gain a strong investor who believe in our work and trust in our quality and in our talents, and invested a huge amount of money into our work, which helps us to really improve, grow the team, improve our development speed, and enter even stronger our growth period of selling, deploying our products, supporting customers, and helping with integration and building up more tools to make development time quicker and more seamless for the users.
Mm-hmm. We may add that the lead investor was Lukas Gadowski with his team Global. For everybody who doesn't know him, there will be a link down here in the show notes, because at the time of the publication of this interview, we already published the interview together with him. That said, he not only invested in you because he shortened the development time of the interfaces in cars, but you're also moving more and more towards developing an operational system for cars. Is that true?
That's absolutely right. So starting with the development of basically a desktop solution to help the workers at an OEM, at a car manufacturer, to optimize their own working process, we also recognize that most of them were not sure which type of software, basic software operating system they should put on these embedded boards to have the whole system running. And in our first prototypes that we are building up, we always bumped into that issue that we had longer discussions about which type of operating system should be used. So that we decided then by 2017 to solve this topic on our own and provide an operating system sooner or later to our customers so that they have a basic car operating system that they can rely on and can be sure that if they have that one deployed on their embedded system, that our system, our application, then dashboard can run on that operating system. So this is how the idea came up on our side. And then we started to investigate which topics will we have to solve to build up a solid operating system. Which issues might come up and how can we, keep maintenance of that operating system and where's the market potential, of course. This are all things we always have to do in advance before we start putting resources on that type of a development. But doing so, we really recognize that there's a huge potential for more than just the common operating systems. I know there's a range of people who are looking into this, but you really have to define your target audience that you want to provide this technology to and what the benefits of that type of operating system has to be. And we think that there's a huge need in the automotive industry. Even beyond the automotive industry. So this is why we started to put this effort into developing an operating system. And we think that it's really important that there is sooner or later a solid and sophisticated operating system, which is based in Europe, to really give European enterprises an alternative system that they can rely on with a different type of business model, with a different understanding of privacy and data ownership than the American providers are offering. So this is why we see a huge potential there to find a great market entry with our solution when it's ready.
When we're talking about the operating system of a car, we don't talk about like one size fits all. I assume you have a certain area of cars you're looking at, you develop your operating system for. I cannot really imagine that a big truck somewhere in a coal mine would run on the same operating system as, for example, a high-end sports car.
Well, they can. There's not really a need to make a difference. But of course, the system we are building will always be customizable on a certain level. So it will only support the necessary libraries and drivers and functionalities which are necessary for that specific hardware. So it's a very dynamic setup of operating systems. So if you say you sit in a truck that doesn't have any driver assistant features like ABS, ESP, or GPS, USB connection, then of course you don't need the software packages which are needed to support these type of hardware elements. But if you are building something up which has all these type of things, like a luxury sedan, then of course the operating system we will deploy will support all these features to make all of functions complete, of course.
What would be the type of aspects, just for me and my audience to understand, what do you need to take care of if you have a car operating system? Does it make a difference if it's an electric vehicle, if it's a combustion engine, if it's a gas run engine, meaning actual gas, or all the aspects of security, running the car, plus the emergency assistance programs, plus, of course, entertainment. I think there's like a big bundle of things you have to take care of, right?
Well, I have to clarify something at this point. In a car, there's not just one computer system or just one operating system running. So this is something that has to be cleared in advance. So a car basically has several layers where different players are involved in. And what we are offering is the main machine interface, right? So where our role is not on really safety critical parts of the car, This has been done by other people. We are taking care of the communication between the car and the driver. So the signals that the driver is receiving from the car, or signals that the driver is setting for the car to change certain parameters. But of course, also on that level, we have some safety topics that we have to take care of in terms of redundancy, fail safes, that we have to make sure that there's a second system that can launch with almost no resources, just to give the basic signals if there's an engine, if the engine is broken, or the light indicator. But we are not involved in the ESP interaction. So that's a different system running there. So we don't have to take care of all safety measures which are built in a car, and we don't have to take care of all sorts of legal requirements which are necessary to get a car up and running on the streets. But we have to take care of course, all legal requirements which are necessary for our part in the car, and that's basically really the interaction between man and machine.
Mm-hmm. I see. So basically, to get it really, really shortened, basically you do you get the data, all the information to everything the user, the driver of the car, or maybe the passengers are actually seeing, right?
Exactly. So part of this is also the infotainment. So as you said, multimedia, if you want to play music, if you want to watch a movie. Yeah. So these are things which have to be solved by our application. And these are interfaces or applications that you can build within our application. So you can actually create your own movie player with your own design, with your own look and feel, how you want it to appear in the car. You can create your own radio system with all the different channels. So you can stream all this data. You're getting a type of list of raw data. These are things we can provide in our application. And then you can define how it should be represented interface-wise in the car. But what we are also doing is to get all the signals, or the status of all signals and sensors in the car. Like, if you have your headlight beams on, of course, we have to know that they are on, so show you that they're on, that they're activated. For example, if you have your left or right indicator on, we have to get the signal. And what we also control is like the HVAC, so climate control, or seat position, if this can be digitally manipulated. So all these type of things, we do have access to them. But if it becomes really safety critical, then we're out of this.
Mm-hmm. Two questions. First, you have the ability that people or developers can build on your platform. Is it something that you would have something like an app store in your software? And secondly, at this point, we can be very sure that Startup Radio, the channel, and the podcast will be available in your system as a standard delivery, right?
Sooner or later, I guess so. I'm afraid we will have to take care of this very soon. But
we have it on record. We have it.
but seriously, basically the architecture of our software is set up in a way that you are getting a full SDK visually based. So you're getting all tools to create any type of application that you want to create. Yeah. And what's very important about our tooling, the focus of this tool is to make it easily accessible for people who are not software experts, like a designer who has learned to be creative and to be inspiring and to reinvent the design of products and visuals. So that's his expertise. But they have to work with computer systems to define how things going to look like in the future without having the knowledge to build it functionally the way they want to visualize it at the end. So we have to reduce the complexity of the IT infrastructure to make it accessible to these type of people, that they can really be creative and create what they think is appropriate. And this is why we decided to provide a set of, or to provide the programming capabilities in terms and form of nodes, so that people can connect certain nodes which are very logically built. So if you have a logic understanding of dependencies, you can connect these nodes in a certain row, and then you can make them functional. And at the other hand, you have certain outputs where you can directly communicate with machines, whether it's Canvas, whether it's MQTT. So we have certain type of communication communication protocols that you can address, of course, HTTP, and thereby control other products, other machines, other signals, and receive them and send them to motors to execute certain functionalities.
Mm-hmm. I see. You talked about simplification, and just one more topic I want to discuss before we get into the outlook and the closing of the interview with. I found that you have a very interesting pricing model on your website, because I've read $13 per client, and that sounds to me like you either expect like a zillion of car designers, or the pricing is a little bit different than people imagine when they first look at your website.
Well, no, basically the pricing is not different than what you've seen. That's the price that we are asking, even though the technology is really deep tech and very complicated. But we don't want to make people be afraid of developing their own products and developing their own tools and developing their own software. We are inviting them. And this is why we are having the price tag so low, to give people easily access to realize their ideas. But where we want to have a bit of participation is at a later stage, because when you deploy our product into, when you deploy our software solution into a product, then there's a licensing model which asks for a licensing fee per unit that you're selling. And depends on the volume, the price is going lower and lower. So this gives still both parties enough leeway to make their revenues.
Ah, I see. And you talked about the deployment, like in the future. What are your future plans from here on out? Because we talked about a little bit about the operation system side, and from what you said, I deduce it's not ready yet.
Well, we expect to have our first release by end of this year, hopefully, if everything works out well. And this will, then we will present it also on some hardware we are designing, to give people a real good impression about what we expect, how an operating system should look like in the future and how they should function. And by end of this year, we will give you more detailed insight about how it looks like, because we believe that we will disruptively change the understanding of operating systems compared to how they are being understood now. So I guess there's going to be a small surprise for all of you. But it's not going to take too long anymore. By end of this year, we will be ready to show you all what you can expect from us for the future.
Mm-hmm. Depending on other circumstances like Corona, it may be beginning of next year. But whenever you're ready for it, let us know. And of course, we'll get an update here in our blog post. Everybody who'd like to learn more, you can go down here in the show notes. There's of course a link to the LinkedIn profile of Osman, as well as a link to the company's website. Osman, thank you very much. It was just a pleasure having you here. You've been a little bit nervous at the beginning, but we're recording now for almost 40 minutes and you did very well. Thank you very much. I really enjoyed the interview.
Thank you for having me. That was a pleasure for me too. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Take care.
That's all, folks. Find more news, streams, events, and interviews at www.startuprad.io. Remember, sharing is caring.